inventory to learn which shells need replenishment. The same is true for me. A fourth step inventory illuminates my own empty spaces, my shortcomings. This doesn't have to be a painful or scary experience. I don't have to pass judgment on an empty shelf, but unless I take the time to become aware of it, I won't do anything to fill it and the problem will continue. By taking inventory, my empty spots can be filled with the help of the remaining steps. I experience the healing power of these steps whenever the formerly hurtful circumstances recur, while the pain that I once felt does not. Follow that with something from Hope for Today on page 152. I grew up believing that my behavior was supposed to be perfect and hating myself when it wasn't. No one actually told me I was supposed to be flawless, but that's what I believed. My self-esteem diminished whenever I made a mistake, didn't know something I was expected to know, did something wrong, or when something I unintentionally did or said ended up hurting someone. I believed my mistakes were proof of my failure at the one thing I was supposed to accomplish, perfection. After some time in Al-Anon, I felt I needed to take step four, a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. I felt fear in approaching the step and shame over each imperfection for which I would have to take responsibility. I believed my inventory was a tally of my goods and bads that would soon prove to God, to myself, and another human being that I was a failure. After thoroughly studying this step in Al-Anon literature and speaking with my sponsor, I decided to change my attitude. Humility, not humiliation, is the long-term goal of the fourth step inventory. The moral inventory is not intended as a scoreboard or report card. There are many things in my life I can't control, but I do have choices about my attitudes and behaviors. The real purpose of the fourth step inventory is to help me develop a list of the things I can change to make my life more spiritual, sane, satisfying, and serene. In this context, perfection is not an option. And then finally, from the ODAP. Heard at an Al-Anon meeting. Before I came to Al-Anon, it was like groping around in a dark room trying to sidestep the obstacles without being able to see them. Because there was no light, I was constantly getting hurt because I tripped over things and bumped into them. Then I came into Al-Anon and learned that I have the power to turn on the light, to get a clear view of my life, its difficulties, and good things. Often, I still forget to turn on the light. I still hurt myself. But I'm getting better as I do more reading and living the program. So I'm going to ask the question again. Why do we do a moral inventory of ourselves? Oh, come on. Somebody.
Are we supposed to
Yeah, feel free.
I can speak for myself. I think the moral inventory is the same thing as when I'm cleaning out my garage. I've got to see what's there. What isn't useful anymore, I have to think of this part. And what's there, I might discover some treasures that I didn't know about or I forgot about. And I can discover those as well. For me, it's just been a matter of England. This is just my fourth step. It gives me a chance to get to home drawing. What I do and why I do it, what works and what doesn't, and having a program, you know, the next, you know, steps and to help me change what needs to change.
Anybody else have a thought on that?
I would say just a sentence.
Okay.
I like to know who I am, so I need to work on the choices and I understand who really I am.
Exactly. For me, the fourth step fits in a certain spot in the steps. By the time I've got to the fourth step, I have come face to face with the fact that my life doesn't work. My life is unmanageable. First step, admit we're powerless over alcohol, and our lives were unmanageable. Before I got here, I looked around and I saw all the unmanageable lives around me that I was busily trying to fix. But what finally sunk in was that my life was unmanageable. We've taken the second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. we found some hope. We found the possibility that somewhere out there was something smarter than Richard, more powerful than Richard, more capable than Richard, that could help Richard. And we've taken the third step, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of that same loving higher power. The fourth step is my first opportunity to affirm that decision that I made in the third step. Why? Because I've looked in the first step. I've said, my life's not working. I keep doing these same stupid things over and over again. I've seen these problems with me, and I can't solve it. I can't fix it. It hasn't worked. Second step, I need something outside of me, some power greater than me, to solve the problem. Well, if I'm sitting in the fourth step and I'm looking ahead, the sixth step and the seventh step, what's happening there? I'm turning my defects of character, my shortcomings, those negative patterns in my life, those things that I can't seem to help, I'm turning those over to the care of that higher power. And I'm offering my cooperation to that higher power in his solving them. Well, how the hell do I know what we're working on if I don't take a good, honest look at my life? That's really what the fourth step is about. It's identifying, for me, what's my higher power working with? What is the starting point? And, you know, we hear all sorts of things about how scary the fourth step is because we're looking at those negative things and so on and so forth. Not for me. Because all I'm doing is I'm identifying the facts. You know, facts are neither good nor bad. I'm just identifying the facts. The point being, for the first time for a lot of us, I'm going to look at those dark corners in my life and see really what's going on here to the best of my ability. And that's where you know, when we talk about fearlessness in the fourth step. Fear comes from judgment. If I'm going into that inventory and I'm writing down those things that I made some mistakes on, and I'm judging me as I'm doing it, that gets awfully hard. And that again comes back to that point that I'm trying to make, that I'm not writing that stuff down to judge Richard. I'm writing that stuff down just to see what's going on. To look at a negative pattern in my life and say, can I change that? I certainly haven't been able to so far. Okay, big guy, this one's yours. Look at another one. Can I change that one? You know, I think I can. I just think I've never looked at it before. And we're sorting through. What's mine? What's his? Why ourselves? When the steps are written out, that of ourselves is emphasized. Why? Okay. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Okay. Why is that even there?
We're the only ones
who can change. Just out of curiosity, does anybody here arrive like me? I got here. I was really, really good at taking inventory. Yours?
Yeah.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
You know, this is the first time that I was face to face with an idea of, okay, yeah, they're wrong. You know, they're crazy, they're nuts, they're evil, whatever they are. Doesn't matter. We're looking at you. You know, I talk to myself that way a lot, by the way. Out of curiosity, who here has done a four-step inventory? Show of hands. Okay. What did you get out of it?
I think the best practice, not for me, and not spending the time, not with myself and my higher power.
But what was the result of that?
I found out in that what my steps were not in order and what part I played in, and that where I would have, I never seen any of those things before, I became aware.
Blair, what's been the result of a four-step inventory in your life?
I've gotten to know who I am and how tricky and where that I went to use the money.
I'm going to take it that's at your bad moments.
Yeah.
Who else had their hand up there?
I learned how to love myself, to forgive myself, to understand myself.
John, what's been the impact of a four-step inventory in your life?
I'm the sickest bugger that I know. aside from that, learning what my defects are and why they're there. I mean, I can chew the fat, I guess, on and really, you know, contemplate my navel over an intellectualizer, but really I'm finding that all of my defects of character are misguided assets. My assets have been twisted and contorted and taken to, that have been corrupted by the disease of alcoholism, and that I can do something about it. Every single thing that I wrote down about me in the inventory, I can do something about
it. I like that point. See, I've done several four-step inventories. I've had the opportunity now to watch quite a few other people do four-step inventories. And I've noticed something really consistent. And that is that the people who I've seen who've really taken this seriously and set about inventorying themselves and their lives, coming out the far end, have some things really consistently in common. And that without exception, from what I can see, are people who are more emotionally mature than when they started the process. And they are more responsible in their own lives. They are more willing to take responsibility for their lives, their choices, the consequences of their choices, and the circumstances of their life. That seems to me to be the consistent result of a four-step inventory, is what I've experienced. It's what I've seen in the guys that I sponsor, and it's what I've seen in the people in the groups around me who have really undergone this process. Has anybody seen something different? Ben?
For myself, the four-step, doing that inventory, and the fifth step was the start of me really being honest with myself about who I was. And the result of that was the start, and it's continuing now. I did it in August, September. But it's a spiritual awakening, a spiritual becoming more aware.
So there's a book that we're not supposed to bring in here that talks about in the fifth step that when we've completed the fifth step, one of the things we do is we thank our higher power that we've come to know him better, and we are starting to become spiritually aware at that point when going through the fourth and fifth step. So getting back to this idea of the searching and fearless part, is there anybody here who has reservations about the idea of taking a four-step inventory? It's okay to have those, but it also gives us something to talk about. Anybody who's, the idea of a four-step just puts them off? You did? Yeah.
Figure out how to keep
have to do it for you.
Okay.
You just sit down and look at what, I guess, other people might call default behavior, you know, that's in your behavior. Or if you change, like, you know, well, am I a bad, am I a bad person? Do I, am I really that wrong? I guess I'm not something that I really want to sit down and mix more with the heart.
Okay. So it's a fear of actually looking at this stuff. Okay. Based on?
Again, I look at myself as I think other people look at me. And the hard part is just to describe, but yeah, I mean, well, this person thinks I'm like this, and this person thinks I'm like this, and am I really, you know, am I really that way? Or is they feel about me, and it's fearful and it's confusing.
Okay. Anybody have something to say to that?
Me, it's the same thing, but it's slightly different for me. I always have this very deep, seated feeling that I don't let it come too much to the surface. It's always there. But that's what I can remember. Not being doing it. I'm not counting. Maybe my higher power loves you, but it's not going to love me. Deep down, I know I am. And that's just wasn't there. And I was afraid to do my step four to find out if I was doing the truth.
Yeah.
That's what
helped
me.
That's very much how I felt for many years. Not being good enough.
And the thing is, the fourth step isn't about finding out how bad I am. Just finding out what are the facts? What did I do? How did that turn out? The trick is to do that without judgment attached. Because as soon as I said, as I say, this is what I did, and only a really horrible person, only a social leper would do that. That's when it does become scary for me. For me, the scariest thing about doing a fourth step was the fifth step. I'm sitting there, I'm working hard on a fourth step, and I get to write something down, and the thought of the fifth step comes into my head. It's like, if I write this down, I got to tell somebody that. Makes it a little bit difficult to be thorough. So if there's a thought that I can plant with you right now, is if you're working on a four-step inventory, do your best to put the fifth out of your head. Just do the fourth. Then we'll worry about the fifth. But with respect to that idea of confirming how bad I am, the thing that I would propose is to approach that from the perspective of leaving my judgment behind. I'm here. You know, I'm doing four meetings a week and step work and, you know, several hundred meetings later, I'm here because my judgment wasn't any good to start with. So this is a great opportunity for me to stop exercising it.
I think, like what Ian said, really hit home for me, though. Like, for me, the word is, I realized that, like, I haven't done the fourth step, but I realized, and everyone has to hear about it in my world, but I never felt worthy, but I didn't know that I didn't feel worthy. My entire life, I'd never felt worthy, so I allowed myself to make poor choices and be in poor situations and be with people that weren't good for me or do unhealthy things. And just recently, when I figured that out, because it wasn't like an obvious concrete thing, because it was just the way I was, and I realized that now I'm adjusting into feeling worthy, and I talk about it, and I talk to people about it, and that I am worthy, and who made me, the person that made me, the creator, whatever, just made a work of art. And once I'm able to feel that, like, to say it is one thing, but to have it here, then I look forward to the fourth step, and I haven't done it, but I think what it will do is humble me and I look forward to being more humble, and I look forward to looking at all those things. I wouldn't have last year because I felt unworthy and I didn't feel good inside, but I didn't even know it. And so to me, a person does have to get to that point where they feel that they are valuable and worthy, so that anything that you pull out is only an asset, like you said. It really is only an asset, and you can maybe do this a little bit and just become a better person. So I can feel myself getting into step four, like I'll be driving along and I'll be thinking of my defects and my things and, oh, I should change this, but I'm not beating myself up. It's just kind of humbling me and making me step back a little bit. But that's key for me.
Some of it too is that, you know, we who suffer from the family disease of alcoholism have a tendency sometimes, and just, you know, maybe some of you identify with this. We maybe a wee bit of a tendency to be a little self-righteous. Just to see ourselves as being on the moral high ground. And the thing is, maybe we are. You know, hanging out with active alcoholics, we look pretty good. And our choices look pretty good. Except that we pick up, we learn things in those interactions, in those relationships, and we go on and we take them out to our other relationships. And for some reason, those relationships don't work. And we have a tough time seeing it because, you know, I'm practicing a solution that has worked for me my entire life. I've been trained from birth to do things this way. Isn't this the way it's supposed to work? And for me, that's something else that a four-step inventory did, is it let me see a lot of those things in my life, those patterns that I was almost incapable of seeing by myself, simply because it never occurred to me that those were anything but normal. Again, no judgment attached, just, geez, that doesn't work, and now I see why. The traditions entered a lot into that process for me, and because they are those 12 traditions teach me principles that are so different from how I was taught to do relationships. So, anybody here think that doing a four-step inventory is a good idea? One of the questions that always comes up at that point, and we hear it again and again in our groups: how do I do a four-step inventory? When I got to the fourth step, I had no clue, and I didn't receive a lot of guidance, and I at the same time, I was in so much pain in my life. I just wanted to keep moving through the steps. I just wanted the pain to stop. I wanted it to get better. So I did what desperate guys like me do when they're desperate. I researched, and I discovered that there were just a stupidly huge number of ways to do a four-step inventory. I've come to believe that there are as many ways to do a four-step inventory as there are people doing four-step inventories. What I've seen is that there really are kind of four groups that I see kind of in common. They differ in little details, but in general, the versions that I've seen can be lumped into one of four categories. And that's not to say that this is all inclusive. This accounts for most of the approaches that I've ever heard of. I know one guy, my first sponsor, did one of his four-step inventories as a painting. You know, that really doesn't fit any of these categories. The first thing I heard about was the ledger method. Take a sheet of paper, draw a line down the page, One of those columns is labeled assets, one of those columns is labeled defects. And the purpose seems to be that I'm going to make a list of not just my bad points, but my good points. And some people approach that even from setting a rule with themselves. For every defect I write down, I have to write down an asset before I can write down another defect. I don't know if anybody here has done that version. I can tell you that it didn't work for me. Okay? And this is not to say don't do it. I'm just saying it didn't work for me. And the reason it didn't work for Richard is because that's where my self-esteem was so bad. You know, it's presented as a way of keeping me from beating up on my self-esteem and doing a four-step inventory to remind myself that there's good things. Well, the only good thing I could come up with at the time, I have one item in the asset list, and that was, I have the moral courage to undertake this process. That was the only thing I could come up with. So, you got that one, and then these 50 defects. That does not do wonders for one's self-esteem. And it was very discouraging. So I gave up on that one. Another common approach is the questionnaire method. Okay. An example of that is Al-Anon's Blueprint for Progress book. I tried that. I got about, I don't know, 20 or 30 questions into it, and it just wasn't doing anything for me. It was being back in school, and I wasn't getting anything out of it. Again, it didn't work for me. I've talked to lots of people. It's done wonders for them. Okay? Just, and it's an example of what an individual process this is. But it didn't work for me. Sorry, you had a question?
Sounds like that's the method.
Oh, okay. One that we hear a lot about in recovery is the four-column method. And that's based on the example given in Chapter 4 of the text Alcoholics Anonymous, the AA Big Book. And that's the one that I ended up doing at that point. What it tends to focus on is, this is what happened, this is what it did to me, and this is where I made a mistake. In the case of the Big Book four-step, it actually is composed of three separate inventories. A resentment inventory, a fear inventory, and a sex inventory. And let me tell you something, if you ever sit in on an open AA meeting and they start talking about the four-step, those people just get really obsessed with that sex inventory. That's kind of repulsive. Sorry, but my experience.
For the leaders, does that have anything to do with the chapter or the major multiple sex inventory on page 69?
Well, that there's been a lot of talk about whether that's significant or not. I suspect you'd have to ask Bill Goldman. That's the one that really was a breakthrough for me. And for one thing, it starts with the resentment inventory. I walked into it. I would have swore to you before I got here that I was not a resentful person. And what the resentment inventory asked me to do is to list the resentments, the people, the principles, the institutions that I am angry at, that I stay angry at. So I got one down. Well, then there's another one. Oh, okay, there's another couple. Well, here's six more. And I stopped counting at 82. What that did was it woke me up. It woke me up to the fact that my adult life had been fueled by resentment. Well, there's a good thing to know about Richard. And not a judgment, but a good thing to know. Again, that same book talks about resentment, the idea that precisely to the extent that we allow these to run our lives, that we squander the hours and days that might otherwise have been worthwhile. That's what I had done. I blew years being angry at you. Fear inventory. Okay, this is the Al-Anon Adult Children Festival. Quick question: How many of us here are from alcoholic families? A few of us. Okay, how many of us here find that we respond a lot out of fear?
Isn't that respect?
In some families. The fear inventory taught me a lot about the things that were driving those reflexes that I couldn't seem to stop. Those reactions that come out of nowhere. The urge to do absolutely anything to avoid someone else's displeasure. Promise them anything. And then when they come back and they ask, how did that promise come? To lie. Simply because that's what's driving it, is that fear. The fear inventory showed me where that went. The sex inventory isn't as exciting as it sounds. The idea, really, is to look at, the way that I put it to guys these days is, what are your values? In a relationship with a member of the opposite sex or the gender of your preference, what are your values? What's important to you in that relationship? List them. What I suggest to guys is write down a description of your ideal mate, the person that you would love to spend the rest of your life with. I don't care how tall they are or any of that kind of stuff, but what did they bring to the party in a relationship? What's your ideal mate look like? Now, for each of those things you wrote down, you want them to be loyal. Here's the question. Is that you? Are you loyal? You want them to be respectful. Are you respectful? You want them to be giving. Are you? And I'll tell you something. The guys that go through that exercise, it's really fascinating watching them and the growth that comes out of that. The other method, or the other kind of grouping on inventory methods is the checklist method. And in that vein, basically it's typically going to be a series of fairly specific questions. And I just did one about a year ago based on the 20 questions Al-Anon adult children. And just as an example, I have that included in your handout. See, where this came from for me, later, I show up in the meetings, in the program, and I come up with these great ideas that I think I invented, and then I go along sometime later, find out somebody else has been doing it a long time. So I thought I invented this, but I didn't. So, the idea being, when I first got to the foundation group, which was my first Al-Anon adult children meeting, at the beginning of every meeting, they read this pamphlet from Al-Anon's Did You Grow Up With a Problem Drinker pamphlet, the Adult Children 20 Questions. And that's been an important meeting to me for a long time, simply because I love hearing those questions, and I love going through them in my head as they're being asked at the beginning of the meeting, and going, yeah. That's me. Yep, I still belong here. Then the idea came, well, there's a pretty good basis for your next inventory. And the approach is, Richard, do you constantly seek approval and affirmation? Well, first of all, Have I done this in the past? You bet. I live my life that way. Am I doing it today? Not nearly as much. Now here's the ringer. What harm has that caused in my life? That seeking approval and affirmation. What other person has it harmed? How has it harmed me? Well, constantly seeking approval and affirmation, what that meant in my life was a circumstance of better than worse than. So it wasn't just a matter of me looking good. If I could make somebody else look bad, then I look better by comparison, right? How many people have I done that to? Lots. Another question out there, do you fear criticism? Abjectly. Am I better now than I was when I got here? A little bit, yeah. This criticism still frees me in my boots a lot of times. What harm does it cause? Well, among other things, I keep secrets. I will keep secrets because I don't want you to know about this thing that I did. I will avoid taking on something that I could be good at, strictly because I don't want to expose myself to that learning curve phase of being bad at it. My wife for years wanted to take ballroom dancing lessons. Specifically as something that we could do together to help cement our relationship. I avoided that for like a decade because if I can't do it well, I'm open to criticism and I'm going to walk in there not knowing how to do it well. Happy to report that for a couple of years now we've been doing ballroom dancing, but case in point. So that's another approach to a four-step inventory. So, for those of you that have done four steps, I'll throw the question at you. How have you done yours? For those that are looking at doing one, what are you thinking of?
I think that's what keeps me from sort of doing it. First of all, it was fear. And then it was the fact that all I felt is that I just had defects. And it wasn't worth me doing because I didn't feel that I had any assets. And now, since I've been going to meetings and listening to people and things like that and doing some soul searching, I find that I do have some assets, but now I just don't know how to get started on this. And it almost reminds me of having to do an assignment at school. And if somebody was to hand me a piece of paper with all this down, probably, but for me to get started just out of the blue, that's what's keeping me down. You know, you say you have 84 of this, I'm thinking, oh, God, 84 of this.
More than that, I kept going.
But see, that's the thing. I'm thinking it has to be this many pages, and it has to be this, and it has to be this. Again, I'm looking for the perfect way to do it.
Okay. Anybody here tried to do the perfect four step? Okay. That was a great way for me to put off my fifth step, was trying to do the perfect four step. Has anybody here done the perfect four step? Remarkable lack of hands. You think?
I just enjoyed the fact that I haven't been down on that long, and our group, some six people decided and not 15 students get together. And I think what was really, really good is that, I mean, that it's gone too long. It's taken us 2 years, and we meet every 2 weeks and that sort of thing. But you know what's really good is the friendship that has really came between the six of us, and also in that accountability that we're accountable to one another. And
So, almost like a co-sponsorship arrangement.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something that I did want to touch on, was the importance in the inventory process to me of sponsorship. Both as a sponsee and a sponsor. I have done, I mentioned the questionnaire, the Blueprint for Progress. I have done a questionnaire four step. I got a new sponsor a couple years ago and needed to do a four step and a fifth step with him just as a get acquainted thing. And the four step he wanted me to do was a questionnaire. It wasn't Blueprint for Progress, but it was, you know, similar kind of thing. And, you know, looking back today, I didn't get a lot of, didn't get a lot out of it, but we got to know each other. But I firmly believe that, you know, when I ask, we talk about, you know, how many ways there are to do a four step, and what's the right way? If your sponsor says that there's a way that you should do it, I think that's the right way. You know, I made a decision to commit to being accountable in my program to another human being and to trust their judgment. So that's, you know, whatever they tell me is the way I'm going to do it. And that, frankly, has worked out pretty well for me. With that said, it sounds like you as a group, are doing the Blueprint for Progress, is that
mm-hmm.
okay?
And also on that, I think from that, what really helped in that was we've always said in that there's no right way in doing it, and
that's
there's no right answer.
Yeah, I'm trying to stress that here tonight. There's no right way. I found some ways that work for me, don't work for me. I've seen some stuff work for me that doesn't work for other people, and vice versa. What I can tell you is that four-column inventory is the one that I recommend first to the guys that I work with. And the ones that stick it out get that result. It's been what I've seen. And it's really gratifying to see that. Oh, I've done one of those too. And yeah, that's just a that's probably the stupidest one I've done. It's also the one I shared with my first sponsor, but for me, it was a great opportunity to talk about what a victim I am. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I don't think I got a lot out of it, but I had enough of the key details in there from the real inventory that the fifth step actually made some progress for me. But I don't think I would do that one. Well, it really only makes sense to do it once, from what I can see. Your first however many years of your life isn't going to change next time you do it. Yeah.
I think for me, with the fourth step, when I first came into Al-Anon, of course, I was probably like every new Al-Anon, and I've been just over here. I wanted to like do them all perfect and get them done, of course. Being a child of an alcoholic, right? Overachiever and perfectionist and all that stuff. And then I'd hear people in meetings talk about, oh, I'm working this step and that step, and I think, well, I'm not really working on any step. And then I'd feel like I have to pretend that I was, because I'm worried about what people will think and the peer pressure of doing the step. And now, because I'm a little bit healthier because of being in Al-Anon, it's going to happen when it's right for me, and I'm going to be gentle with myself. And that's when my fourth step will be the most effective. And I've sort of dropped that whole trying to do it this way. Because I was like this lady over here, and I could put an assignment, it's work, it's all these things. And I'm going to do my fourth step when it feels good. And that day will sort of just come. And when I have time to dedicate to doing it, you know, if I have 3 days where I don't have a lot of commitments and I'm feeling in a good frame of mind and I have time for myself. And for me, it's like a gift to myself. And that's my approach mentally. And all that time will come. I'm not putting myself on a schedule or pressure. And that goes back to loving myself, you know, and finding.
I've seen lots of people that works well for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for me.
It sounds like it works for you.
Yeah.
I can tell you that it doesn't work for the way the disease manifests itself in me.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be accountable. That's a little early. I think that's a little early. Oh, okay. Well.
But the only thing is that I agree, and I'm doing this, but I procrastinate. And I do that at work, too. And until a deadline is put there, I put it off. But if someone was to come and say, Sherry, I want that door to set by November 15th, I'll have it there for November 15th. But if nobody is telling me and giving me a deadline, I keep looking at it, thinking, yeah, and I'll answer one or two questions. And so, of course, when I go to meeting, I can say, yeah, I'm working on it because I've probably answered one or two questions.
Or I looked at the sheet of paper today.
Yeah, and then I closed the file cabinet.
Yeah,
on
see,
it.
That's precisely. I need to be accountable. I need a sponsor who is going to hold me accountable. And the other part of that is that whole self-esteem thing, and the loving ourselves. Identifying the things that aren't working in my life is not loving myself. And I already talked about for me. I didn't have the wherewithal to get the self-esteem. But you know what? There's a funny thing happens in the process of these steps. In the fourth step, we identify where our lives are going wrong. In the fifth step, we break the secrecy. In the sixth and seventh, we ask our higher power for help. In the eighth and ninth, we go out and we clean up the wreckage of our past. And somehow, in the process of those things, I gained a little self-esteem. I started liking Richard a little bit. And today I probably could sit down and do one of the ledger method inventories. I could even do a good thing for a bad thing if I had to. The point being, that was the process I needed. I needed to be, this is the task. This is when you're going to have it done by. And this is how you're going to approach it. And I really needed somebody to be that precise with me. Tenth step. Continue to take personal inventory. No, we were wrong. Probably admitted it. Tenth step for me is one of the focal points of my day, all day. And the point being, I went to an awful lot of effort going through that process I just described, cleaning up the wreckage of my past. The tenth step is where you have an opportunity to stay current. The important thing to me there is that idea of when we were wrong. First word in the step, when, not if. It's the step that gives me permission to be human. I'm going to screw up. And I'm going to watch myself. In my case, the approach that I take, I'm going to watch myself for when am I being selfish, when am I being self-centered, dishonest, or fearful. Because those are the things that show up for me. And, if this was a different place and time, I would introduce myself by saying, my name is Richard, and through the grace of a loving higher power, the 12 steps and sponsorship, I have been sober for 36 hours. Because that's my last slip. Yesterday morning, I had a coworker come to me and ask me, this thing that you were supposed to do earlier in the week, did it get done? And I honestly thought I remembered doing it. So when I went and looked at it, discovered that I hadn't, and she's looking over my shoulder, that thing inside me is still there. I hadn't seen it in a while. But the reflex is, bluff it through. Yeah, of course, I did it. Somebody undid it. So, and that's the tenth step in action, is me looking over my own shoulder doing that. I had a circumstance a few months ago that I've shared about in meetings that I attend. And person at work who's very negative, very difficult, and we have a history. And part of my amends to her over the last 4 years has been that I, to the best of my ability, one day at a time, treat her with unfailing courtesy and respect. A couple months ago, some stuff happened around the office, and I, through a thin wall, overheard her making some comments about me. Well, I felt the need to go out and discuss that with her. And I walked through the doors fully thinking that I was in control. This was going to go okay. And in about 45 seconds, I was a raging, drooling lunatic. And I stormed out. And I got... I wasn't even in the parking lot when the 10th step started kicking my ass. I went for lunch. I drove home. I got on the phone, turned myself into my sponsor. Because one of the things that I need to do when one of those things happens is I need to share it with one of you. I need to get it off my chest. And he said, you know what you got to do? You have to make amends. Yeah, I know that. I went back to the office, head spinning. You know, the squirrel cage was going full speed. And I walked in, and I walked up to her. And this angry, bitter, ugly-minded woman insisted on apologizing to me first. It took the third step prayer at least a dozen times just to get me in the door. But I walked in. Because I was on the moral high ground. I've got a program. I'm making a mess. And she pulled the rug out from under that one. Oh, I hated that. Anyway, we've run out of time to discuss the 10th step. I just thought I really wanted to share that story with you. I want to thank you for joining me today. And please encourage you to, if you have any questions, I love talking about this stuff. Corner me later. And let's enjoy the rest of the festival. Thanks for coming.